Thanks for tuning in to the Tail Lights Podcast. I'm Eric Thormalin, and today I'm here with Coach Dave Fulkerson. Coach Fulkerson, thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and where you're from, what your parents did, where you went to school, all the good stuff.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. I grew up in Rogue River, Oregon. He was a Rogue River chieftain, and my dad was a gunsmith, and my mom was a secretary. Grew up in the Cascade Mountains in southwest Oregon, and did a lot of outdoorsy stuff and usual high school stuff that people do. I went to Southern Oregon State University, ran track there, and graduated and went on. And when I graduated, I had a degree in math, didn't really know what I was going to do with it. And
what all events did you compete in there at the college level?
Collegiately, my principal event was the 400 meter hurdles.
Okay.
And I'd long jump some, and I ran the highs, but I was a bit small for that. I never got real fast at the highs. I got in the mid 14s or so in the highs, but just never quite got real good at the collegiate highs. Or
did they do the 400 hurdles at the high school level there?
No, back then we had a weird event. We had normal. It was 120 yard high hurdles back then, the same as the 110, you know, highs now. But we had the 180 yard low hurdles, and so that was the second. It would have been better for me had we had the 300 or 400 meter hurdles. It would have been a suitable event. I ran on, I long jumped and ran on the mile relay team in high school as well.
Yeah, gotcha. Did you do any relaying on in the college level?
Ran on the mile relay from time to time, but I was a good but unremarkable quarter miler.
Yeah, gotcha. Better for you if the competition would have those hurdles up with them, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I relied a lot on hard work and developing skill, because I was fast by pedestrian standards, but not real fast by collegiate standards.
Yeah. So you get your math degree, and you were figuring out what you were going to do as a job?
Yeah, got married pretty quickly and did an odd variety of things. You know, worked for a savings and loan company and other stuff. And then it occurred to me that I thought I'd like to be a teacher. So I went. By that time, we were living in Seattle. And so I went to the University of Washington, got my teaching credentials, and started teaching in Oregon, not far from where I grew up, and that's where all that started.
Did you coach with that too early on or no?
Yeah, that, and it was, I hadn't really thought about it. You know, I'd competed in high school and college, and I was just looking to be a math teacher, and the first job that I got, they looked at my application. They saw that I ran track in high school and college. They said, well, hey, do you think you could coach cross country and track? I said, yeah, I suppose so. So yeah. I just kind of fell into it, and that then kind of became a big part of what I did during my professional career.
Yeah, right. How long did you stay there in Oregon?
I was at that first job for 4 years, and then the girl that I married was a Texas girl, so her family was down here, and so we decided to move down here. We came down and did some, I had a couple of brief teaching jobs here, and then wound up going to Hawaii. I taught at St. Louis High School in Hawaii and coached there as well, and we had a state champion cross country team there, and then
did you travel
around a lot, wound up coming back from there.
Did you just end up going to Hawaii kind of on a, like, because there was a job available?
Well, it was kind of funny. This is back in the early 80s, and Magnum P.I.
Yeah.
Was a real popular TV series. And we were just sitting around watching Magnum P.I. one evening, and I said, man, that'd be kind of cool to live in Hawaii. And so we planned a Hawaiian vacation for the following summer, and I lined up some job interviews while we were there on vacation. Got a job and went over there.
How was the pay over there compared with the cost of living?
The the cost of living wasn't as bad as people sometimes imagine it, except for buying a house. Real estate there is a teacher can't afford to buy a home there. Right. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't any worse than living in, you know, we lived in Honolulu, and it wasn't any worse than living in any other big city. And teacher pay there is a lot better than it is here in Texas. And I taught at a private school there, a Catholic school, and there the private schools pay a lot more than the public schools, unlike here. So it wasn't bad. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a struggle to live there.
Yeah. How long did you stay there in Hawaii?
Just a year.
Okay. And you guys won state in the 1 year?
Yeah. Well, they had been pretty good.
Yeah.
So while I was there, they offered me the job. And so I got names and addresses of the guys. It was all boys school. I got names and addresses of the guys on the cross country team and introduced myself. And we got over there. We moved over there midsummer sometime, and I got together with the guys, started working with them, and like I said, they had already been pretty good, and just kind of fell together.
Yeah.
Can't take a whole lot of credit.
So when you leave Hawaii, you go back to Oregon?
Or? No, came back here.
Okay, came back to Texas, gotcha.
And I got out of, I taught, had a couple of short teaching jobs where I didn't coach. And did some other things outside of teaching for a while, and then I had opened my own little home remodeling business and repairs here locally. Worked a lot in San Antonio, and this is in the mid '80s.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, the real estate market. I did a lot of finish work in new homes, and the real estate market kind of hit the skids for a while, and the companies that I was doing work for started paying late, and I could see the handwriting on the wall, and I knew Joe Donges. You remember Joe Donges,
the
superintendent here. I already knew him, and just coincidentally, about the time I decided to close the doors on my business and go back into teaching, he gave me a phone call and said they at that time had some middle school teachers that had run off two or three math teachers. He said he needed somebody to come in, and this was in mid-year, and he needed somebody to finish up the year. So I did that, and then the following year moved up to Burney High School and started teaching calculus and all of that. And then I wasn't coaching at that time. At that time in Burney, as was common then, cross country and distance running in general was not regarded very highly, and there weren't a lot of people outside of Houston or Dallas and certain other areas that were very good at it. But after a couple of years of just teaching, Joe Donges directed the athletic director at the time to create a cross country. You know, at that time cross country was always an assistant basketball coach or something like that got it as a second sport, and they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't care very much. But Joe Donges was responsible for me getting the cross-country track position that I got. Initially, we weren't very good, but we gradually made our way into the sport and did all right.
So what year did you start your coaching career here? In
91, I think.
Okay.
90 or 91. Okay. I lose track.
And then, what's that?
I lose track.
Yeah, gotcha. And then, so did you do that continuously all the way up until retirement?
Or, yeah.
Okay, I thought there might have been another.
No, I was, at Burney High School until Champion opened.
Right.
When Champion opened, and wound up over there.
Mm-hmm.
But virtually the same job.
Yeah.
Slightly different environment.
You know, sometimes when you're building a program, you have kind of that breakthrough runner that starts to, you know, clear a path or what have you, for others maybe mm-hmm. going forward. Who was kind of the first runner that really started to touch on that state level for
me? The first quality runner that we had was a guy named Jesse Ward. And when I took over, the 2 mile record at the high school was something like 10:20 or something like that, which is
if only for I people, could have run
for,
back then.
For people who don't know, that's not very good for a school record. And yeah. Jesse Ward was the first one. He dropped the school record down to about 950 or something like that. And he qualified for state and cross country and did, you know, by that time we were starting to get pretty good. We were above average by that time. We weren't recognized statewide or anything like that, but he was the first state caliber runner mm-hmm. that we had. And then a couple of years after that, we got a guy named John Burt, and he was the first really elite runner that we had here to do stuff. He reset the school records in the mile, 2 mile, ran at UT and went on. Those were the first two guys that really started bringing recognition here.
Yeah, kind of a jump from Jesse Ward to John Burt going to a whole nother level.
Yeah. Jesse was light years ahead of anybody that we had had previously, but then John Burt was the caliber of runner that you would recognize as being, you know John.
Yeah.
You know John. And he ran a 4:18 or something like that and 9:20 and that, mm-hmm. those were times that were respectable anywhere.
Right. Anytime you go on a track, you got a chance to win.
Yeah.
In most places.
He had a legitimate chance to be state champion in the 2 mile. He didn't run very well that particular day, but he was the first really elite runner that we had.
Right. Yeah. So as the team kind of comes together, you know, like a lot of coaches will have difficulties, I guess you could say, kind of separating that all that individual glory, you know, maybe at a time when you have only one individual that's mm-hmm. doing real well and getting others to buy in and go along mm-hmm. with that runner. Is there anything that you feel like that you did or that happened in the program that helped? Because eventually you're going to have a point where you're almost have a team of like 5 John Burts, which is crazy.
Well, we ultimately did.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, early on, well, I've always been real strong on team first, and I think that I might have preempted some of that stuff. Just I don't know, not that I want to take a lot of credit for that, but that's just always been my attitude. And mm-hmm. I think that probably you get young kids coming up, they'll buy in, I think, pretty fast to stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when we had teams where, you know, in the old days you could be pretty successful if you had a couple of guys that were really good and then, you know, a handful of guys that could run without embarrassing themselves, you could have a fairly good team. But the good athletes on the team were always good about, they always wanted the rest of the team to be better because they knew that it was good for everybody if the team was good. So it, you know, for most of the time that I coached, egos weren't a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we could get to our national champion
sure.
team later.
Yeah.
It was a little different personality. But for the most part, you know, everybody has always wanted the team to be good, not just set themselves apart.
I tell my kids today that I see if I'm on a team and I've got 5 teammates or 4 teammates mm-hmm. or whatever that are as good or better than me, that's like having insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have that bad race at regionals and you wouldn't get to state otherwise, if you've got 5 teammates that ran well mm-hmm. and you had that bad, you've got another opportunity to go out and run again and not end your season on that bad race.
Well, you know what that's like. You know, when you guys were here, that was one of the most fun periods in my coaching career because to that point we had been good. You know, we'd gone to state regularly and finished third a few times. And it was obvious when, you know, you and Jacob and Andrew and the rest, you know, were freshmen. Mm-hmm. You could tell that you guys were capable of doing something pretty good. You know, you could never predict state championships or anything like that, but you could tell it was pretty good. But like you were just saying, the whole collection of you guys, there were 8 guys ultimately by the time you guys were seniors that were all capable of being the number one guy in a particular race. You were number one guy some of the time. Jacob, Andrew, you know, everybody's,
yeah.
you know, Evan, it's some more often than others, but there was that, and that's what led to a lot of our success, because we had that many guys that were that good and weren't going to be pissed off if somebody else was the number one guy on the team on a particular day.
Right, yeah.
But that was a real fun time to have that many guys that close together.
Yeah. Do you think, a lot of the time, I think as a group, we focused on, with track, wanting to run the, not necessarily me on the 4x800, because I didn't have that 800 speed, but, like the distance medley and the 4x800, mm-hmm. Your team, if they're competing in track and they're buying into that whole concept, and you've still got the team stuff even moving over to track, I mean, how much do you think over the years when you had those good cross-country teams, or did you also have those teams that were just really lighting it up on the track and those types of relays and the distance events across the board?
The track success lagged behind the cross-country success by a few years. We were having pretty high-level success in cross-country and not quite as much success in track. And some of that was because my background was in hurdling and jumping. Mm-hmm. And so for a long time during track season, I would turn the distance people over to somebody else. I might write the workouts for them and do all that, and it became frustrating to me. I didn't think it was fair to the kids to do that ultimately. So ultimately I said, I can't do that hurdling stuff anymore. I had to, and that's about the time you guys came around. I said, I can't turn these guys over to somebody else in the springtime mm-hmm. and allow things not to go as well as they might,
Right. That and continuity is important.
I don't have to explain to you that, that success in cross country did carry over, because you guys, although none of you showed any animosity when you got beaten by a teammate, none of you wanted to be beaten by a teammate. So,
it's just one of those things where, and I say this to my kids today, is that you don't have any control over anybody mm-hmm. else in that race. I mean, if you have guys around you that are mm-hmm. capable of beating you, that also means you have guys around you that are great quality for you to train mm-hmm. with. And there's a lot of people, and I can think about ones that were there during my time, that they were the sole guy on their team, mm-hmm. and it never seemed like it panned out real well for them, and particularly in big races and stuff. And you just wonder, for us, we had that constant push mm-hmm. all year long of each mm-hmm. other, and I think it was a big benefit.
I think that's valuable in training, I think. And it was, I consider myself to be really fortunate to have started, or not even start here, but to have gotten the program started as the way it ultimately became here, because it's just a nice place to run. And as a community, if there were enough people interested in doing what you were doing and what everybody else is doing in running, there are a lot of places where running still hasn't caught on. People don't aren't interested, but there's Bernie, although it's rural, always until recently has been a rural country community, the people are open to new things. There's a more diverse set of interests among people, and when people started noticing, hey, there's that cross country team, they're pretty good, there were a lot of people interested in doing it. And once you get a lot of people interested, you get a few people competing against each other, and they begin to bond and train harder and help each other out and stuff. And it was nice being able to take in enough runners and enough quality runners to do what you were saying. If you're training against people that are as good as you are, your training just goes better.
Yeah, definitely. It's easier to push through on that hard day where you're maybe not mm-hmm. having your best workout, because you see the competition mm-hmm. right in front of you, and you just don't want it to be that much more in front of you.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you're having a rough workout somewhere else and you have nobody around you, you don't have that daily reminder, mm-hmm. somebody's out working me today, So I thought it was definitely a benefit.
It was great. And you're, here, that your graduating class, that was the first bunch where we had an identifiable group of guys, young guys starting off as freshmen, that you could tell if they, if y'all stuck with it and worked hard at it, they're capable of doing something.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that year after we graduate, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, I mean, you could speak to this better than me, but it's probably got to be one of the ones that was like, I don't want to say the most unexpected state championships, but that might be a good way to say it. You know, you guys kind of came together just right. You had great leadership with, you know, Fuentes and Benavides.
Yeah.
And then behind that, you had a young Lauren Wilson and
Oh, David Wilson. He's a story worth telling.
Yeah.
Yeah, we came back that following year. And, of course, you know, that year that you guys won, that was the school district's first state championship in anything. Mm-hmm. And we all knew going into that season that anything less than the state championship, and it wasn't a matter of being full of ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
But we knew that was the goal, that anything less than that was probably going to be disappointing. And that, you're right, that following year, we had no right to expect it. You know, we knew we'd be pretty good, but, you know, we went through that whole year, like the year, you know, and 2003 when you guys won it, you know, we had 10 or 12 good varsity runners. Well, half of those guys graduated, you know, and
right.
We came back, and all that season we were running basically with four guys that could run real well.
Mm-hmm.
And we were winning, we were having lots of success, but, you know, those five, six, seven guys just weren't there. And then David Wilson was a guy who was fun to have around. He was a senior. He was pretty unremarkable.
Yeah.
Up until about our district meet that year. And he ran in a JV race and just went nuts. And he ran fast enough to have been like our number four varsity runner. Crushed everybody. We didn't even expect him to. He was only an average JV runner. And then all of a sudden he did what he was capable of doing. And then the following week at regionals, he ran, you know, we had to move him up. And then following week at regionals, he ran real well. We finished second to Lockhart.
Right.
And then the next week at state, God, everybody put it together and won another state championship.
Yeah. Danny Velo would have been maybe another guy in the top five.
Danny Velo was really good. He would have been.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that was, yeah. It looked like there was potential there. Anytime you got two guys as good as, you know, Fuentes and Benavides up mm-hmm. front for you, and you know, we'll probably hit on Lauren Wilson some. I know he wins a track state championship for you and was a hard worker. But Lauren, as a freshman, you're just not real sure, I don't think, what kind of pieces you have almost. It just came together right there at the right time.
And it was.
We joked with those guys all the time and told them, when we graduate, you guys aren't getting out of district. And boy, were we wrong.
I was confident they'd make it to the state meet, but I had no idea that, you know, I didn't expect them to make it to the podium until that David Wilson. He was a crazy guy. He was real funny.
I think we stole that line from Jacob Hackleroy. Just to be clear, and Josh Mycock would tell us that all the time the year before. So we just
We have had guys before and since make those same kind of comments to people.
Yeah.
That was fun. And this was, like I said, the success here just has been a real combination thing. Like I said, once, you know, we got reasonable numbers out and everybody's having a good time doing what we were doing and working hard and wanting to succeed, you know, we got, you know, Stan Leach became the athletic director, and he's a running guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted us to do whatever it took to win. There are places where, you know, the athletic departments actually get in the way of running programs and don't let them go where they need to go to compete or do the things that they want to do. But Stan always encouraged us to, you know, do whatever it took for us to get good, and just the setting that we've got here to run in has always been great. I can't imagine being in a place where you can't go out and do road work, you know, just get out on the road and run. But I know that there are places where you can't.
Right.
And we've got City Park, the lake. We've just got ideal training geography here for doing what we do, and good administrative support and good people. I knew it was all the right stuff coming together at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in numerous places, and I've never been in a place where we had so many spots that we could run in, you know, as right here. I mean, because you get into some of the bigger cities, some of those parks have rules about how many kids you can bring in there, and then if your school district is not in that zone or whatever, that city zone, or that's, you know, where that park's at, they have special reservations on this, and it gets, you know, crazy. So sometimes finding... like what we had, all the different spots to run in was really good. I think it kept everything fresh.
I've always been big on diversity. I mean, different kind of road runs, different kind of, you know, runs on natural surfaces wherever you can find them and stuff like that. And I hear some coaches talking about what seems to me just a monotonous training routine where they've only got two or three or four things that they can do during an entire season. I'd hang myself. I don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've always focused on is diversity. I just love diversity, doing different stuff at different times and having different challenges and making it interesting for everybody. If it's not interesting, running can get boring pretty fast.
Right. Yeah. No question about it. When David Fuentes and Danny Velo and David Wilson graduate, you know, you do have another flush of the seniors, and I'm not sure if there's even another one that would have been in that group, maybe Austin McLean.
Yeah, there were there were a number of people that graduated that year. And then the following year, we caught another break.
Yeah.
We got
Paul Fritz.
And Tyler Barnes and some other guys came out and ran cross country that just... I mean, we were looking at being pretty average.
Right.
And then we got some guys, some really good athletes that weren't experienced runners that came out, and they wound up getting second in the state.
And you've got Joel Benavides on that team who has two gold medals at that point, a bronze medal, and then he's going to get a silver one that senior year.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got to be one of the most decorated guys.
Well, yeah, that's what I've always... He's the most decorated cross-country runner in the school's history. He was on a lot of good teams.
Right. Tyler Barnes is a senior that year as well. And so is Paul Fritz.
Paul Fritz.
And so is Joel.
Yeah.
And so you guys are going to get a... you got Lauren Wilson on that team also. Mm-hmm. And you guys are going to get a massive influx of these freshmen that are going to be on the eventual national championship team. That are going to be paired up with Lauren Wilson that next year that don't make it to state.
Right. Yeah, they're...
When you take like that 07 group that doesn't go to state or the 2000 team that I failed out on, when you take those types of teams and you get fourth on them, you know, I think I got fourth in region, right?
Yeah.
In 07. Now, you know, the top four teams.
Right. There are a couple of times when we missed that we would have advanced into the new
rules. Do you think that making the top four, you know, was a good thing? Or do you think that we rightfully missed those years, even though we were in one of the hardest regions that usually ended up having three teams in the top five or six?
4A boys in region four was probably the toughest thing to be in at that time.
Yeah.
But, you learn a lesson. You know, and you go in, even if you're confident you're the best team, you know, it teaches you the lesson that anything less than your best isn't going to be enough. You know, and that, like, you know, that in 2010, after, you know, that national championship team graduated, we were ranked number one in the state all that following season without those guys. Of course, we weren't really, but we were ranked there, but went into regionals, we're going to go to state next. Well, we came up with less than our best at regionals again, and a couple of teams just ran out of their minds, and that's another time we wound up fourth and going home. So you learn from it. I you don't like it, but it's
right.
But you know, you learn that just putting on that Bernie jersey isn't enough to go out there and win anything, and that's, you know, wherever you are in whatever sport, you know, you have sustained success, there's always a danger that that's going to happen. You just think that, we're Judson. We're going to go out and win every football game we ever participate in. You know, we're you know, Bernie, we're going to win every cross-country race. Well, from time to time, somebody needs to remind you that that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, you know, Coach Lovell over at Antonian is one of the folks that I'm going to be interviewing here pretty soon, too. Mm-hmm. And I can remember when we would go even early season to his meet, and it was kind of like, well, we're fifth in state last year. You know, we're Bernie, and, mm-hmm. you know, this is just some private school, and who cares if they won the – you know, we're way better. That's yeah. That was kind of the mentality.
Uh-huh.
And, boy, they got us that first meet of uh-huh. the year, our junior year. And then, you know, senior year we went in knowing that's a good uh-huh. team and we've got to be ready to run. And
yep.
you know, it's part of the learning process. Mm-hmm. I think you can grow up in a place like this or you know, maybe a Highland Park or a South Lake Carroll or Woodlands or something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just think it's inherited.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna get it. You're going to
yeah,
be easy because that's always how it is.
Yeah.
And those are the years where you kind of get bit.
Yeah, you have to be reminded from time to time that it's not your heritage. It's whatever you
yeah.
put into it.
With the group that comes up there in 07 and they miss and they come back in 08, and you've got all of these guys that are, as I said earlier, you know, I mentioned they're going to run almost across the board John Burt caliber times. They're
that,
close,
mm-hmm.
if not.
Right. They were close to that. That was a team where, and it was in the process there was a lot like when you came through. You know, when you guys graduated, you were there wasn't NXN, there wasn't a national championship competition at that time. That started the year after you guys graduated, but mm-hmm. Harrier Magazine had you guys ranked number 7 in the nation mm-hmm. at the end of the season. So that was a pretty special group. Well, this next group that came up, you know, with you know, you had Nathan Christensen, Ethan Doherty, and Colby McCune, all the rest of those guys.
Right.
You know, it was the same experience. You could tell when they were young, you know, when they were freshmen, you could see that there was a chance that they could achieve something. Again, you never know how good they're going to be, but ultimately they did grow into a team that was, you know, a once in a coaching lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, it... They you know, we had 8 guys on that team, if you include Josh Hernandez.
Right.
That would have been the superstar on almost any other team anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
In 08, we had our eyes set on a state championship then, and they won.
Which is a quick leap, you know,
yeah,
from the
fourth
in the region.
The previous year, when the bulk of those guys were sophomores, they finished 4th in the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that you're right. From the time that group was freshmen, they missed the state meet. They finished 4th next year, and then the
in a crazy 3-way tie.
It was a weird situation, and that was another year when we lacked depth. We needed more depth to cover up a couple of minor injuries we had on the team to be able to, we could have finished as maybe as high as 2nd in the state that year. That was the year that Seven Lakes was formed.
Mm.
And of course when Seven Lakes High School came together, they got all the best runners from all over the Katy school districts. They crushed everybody that year, and they competed in a lower division against us. So, but anyway, that's beside the point. But
right.
By the time these guys, you know, the bulk of those guys, that particular class for juniors in 08, they expected to win a state championship. It was a fun ride. I can't remember what my point was to start off. But
next year they come back, and I don't exactly remember what the scores were, how many were in the top 10 and top 15, but you know, in 09 when they win the national championship, I mean, the state meet, it just was ridiculous.
I think we scored 30 points at the state meet, which I think at the time was a state meet scoring record, and you guys had done something, so you were about 40 points at the state
meet. It was in the 40s,
yeah. And so they were, and yeah, it was crazy. We had, and you know, we would go, they perfect scored a number of meets during the season. You know, just, in fact, they they came in 1 through 7 in a couple of meets during the season. Yeah.
Did you run gold with them at all? Like, because they were on such a different level. Almost.
I did. Their junior, you know, previous to that, I still don't care much for gold races or elite
right.
races, because a lot of people just get into them because they want to get out early, and they're not, the teams aren't screened, and I've never been a big fan of them. But you know, UTSA used to have a great cross country meet where they had a gold. So those 2 years, 08 and 09, we would run a team in the gold division, and then we'd run another team in our classification. And of course, that bunch would win the gold division, and the next group of guys we had behind them would compete very well in our classification even after that.
Mm-hmm.
And but we look for all, you know, we'd go to Nike South, we look for all the top competition we could find over those 2 years.
You have to when your team gets to that level, because you know, senior year for us, I remember we went to San Marcos, and I think we had 8 in the top 10, and it was like, you know, we almost start laughing during the race to an extent, because it's just...
Yeah, we went up there because there were some, I forget who the teams, we knew we'd see Lockhart, and San Marcos, I think, was good back then. I can't remember what the other team, but we went there just for that purpose, to find some improved competition. But
and I think both those teams ended up not going there, which, you know... But I mean, on paper, it you know,
right. We went there looking, expecting other competition.
Yeah, it was kind of a
competition.
It was the only time we ran there when I was in high school. But we were trying to do something mm-hmm. different. We ended up just in a meet that
a
was
laugher.
Like, oh,
it really
know.
Was.
But it was, you know. So you get the 09 team. You guys win state by a lot. Tell our listeners maybe the story about one of your runners that gets hit by a car there.
Travis Barkley, I love that guy. I still see him from time to time and talk to him.
Yeah.
And you know Travis
yeah,
really well.
He's
he's a good athlete. He could have played any sport, but he was a great runner. And I would argue that he was probably the best runner we've ever had here.
Yeah.
You know, he 9/11. 2 mile.
Yeah.
Never held the mile record. He thought he wasn't a good miler, but he ran like 4:20 or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But there was always something happening to Travis. He had a hard time getting out of his own way. So he was out on a bunch of the guys were out on a run on their own, and he somehow managed to run in front of a car. Got himself knocked out for several weeks, got all dinged up, and he missed. I'm trying to think of what all he missed.
I think he was
ready to go again by the state meet, but mm-hmm. he missed district, missed regionals, missed the whatever meet was previous to district, I think. And at that time, one of the you know, those guys work so hard. So those guys would sometimes go out and put in 100-mile weeks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and one of my biggest jobs is trying to rein them in, not to go out and, you know, run themselves into injuries. And so we wound up thinking that might have been a blessing for Travis, give him a couple of weeks rest to
right.
to be fresh when, you know, the end of the season got there. But that was crazy. He was all banged up. He was lucky to have come out of that the way he did, but he came back to the state meet and ran well. He was second or third on the team at the state meet, if I remember right. But then by the time we got to Portland, he was our top guy again, and he was our number one finisher there.
Right, and since you bring that up, and you know, if you don't want to answer, you don't have to, but you know, Ryan Miller and Josh Hernandez went on to be probably the most successful of that bunch at the college level.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably came into the fold later than a lot of the rest of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just my observation of knowing several of them, you know, on an acquaintance basis or whatever, seemed like a lot of them were trying to run Lauren mileage at a very early point. And I just wonder how you feel, like, you see a guy like Ryan Miller that kind of holds back and waits, you know, maybe comes into the fold later. Maybe it wasn't that he was waiting so much, but that he waits to start putting that heavy mileage on until, you know, junior or senior year and then into college and sees all that progress.
He progressed what I would call normally. I never felt like it was my job as a high school coach to get everything out of a kid that I possibly could.
Right.
I don't believe in running kids into the ground. And I can't fault, you know, guys when they start running what I would call too much. I mean, they want to get good. They're sold on the idea of logging miles and stuff. But, you know, we've seen how guys can get hurt. Lauren, you mentioned Lauren Wilson. You know, he lost his senior track season, mm-hmm. you know, to overuse injuries. He was the top miler and two-miler in the state halfway through his senior season, but he wasn't able to compete. Second
did
half.
He win both of those junior year and state as well?
No, he won the mile, but not the 2 mile.
Okay.
And gotcha. In fact, I don't believe I could be wrong. I don't think he ran the 2 mile. Back then, the 2 mile and the mile were on the same day. Mm. And we knew that his best chance was in the mile. And so I think we passed on the 2 mile so that he could go. I've always believed that a gold medal from the state meet is really special. A couple of third place medals doesn't equal a gold medal.
Right.
Doesn't equal it. So we did that. But you're right about, and you can see in guys like Ryan and Josh and Moses Loevino is another one mm-hmm. that you could see that by the time they were seniors, they still had a lot of upside. These other guys had run so hard for so long, you know. Ethan,
right.
Nathan, Colby, you know, these guys, they had run so hard for so long, Will, that they were closer to their top end than these other guys were. And, but I was of the opinion that those guys had the most upside if they were going to stick with it. And they wound up, as you said, being pretty successful.
Yeah. You know, well, and I think now a battle you fight almost to an extent in coaching is, and all the websites were a big deal as I was coming into high school and everything, and Steve Magnus was sharing his running log, mm-hmm. and he was running so much.
Oh, yeah.
That I know I started feeling my junior year like, that's what I need to do. Mm-hmm. I need to run 100 miles a week.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and if you don't stretch right, if you don't warm up right, if you don't do some certain things right to take care of your body, you can really crash
yourself.
You
can
beat
yourself up pretty bad. I've been, you know, that's, you know, when I was active, I spoke at coaching clinics from time to time, and that was always a common question, you know, what kind of mileage? And I've always felt like it, you know, cross country is only 3 miles. I mean, only a lot of people think that's forever, but
yeah.
you know, it's not a marathon. And in track, the longest distance is 2 miles. And I've always been of the opinion that if you can't get enough work done in 60 to 65 miles, then you're not training very well. I've always felt like, you know, that, you know, volume is one way to go. You know, there are a lot of people say that, you know, miles are like money in the bank. You know, you just log all those miles. Well, that's one way to succeed, but it's also a common way to, you know, wind up getting hurt. And like I said, I've always felt like if you couldn't get all the work you needed to do in 60 to 65 miles, and that's just for the really good runners, in my opinion, then you need to change the way you're training. You don't have to go out and hammer out. For high schoolers, you don't have to go out for a 2 mile race, you don't have to go out and hammer out 80, 90, or 100 miles a week.
Yeah, money in the bank wasn't that valuable during the Great Depression.
Sometimes, you know, be good if it's locked up. I had to try to, you know, when you get guys like that, you have to try to rein them in. You can't fault them. They want to be good. They want,
yeah.
you know, they think, you know, they believe that doing that, and it's possible. You can succeed like that, but you can also get hurt that way.
Right. So 2010 comes along, and you said they get fourth in the region as well.
Yeah.
And then I think 11 and 12 are the next, the final set.
Back-to-back, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the 2010 group that gets fourth in the region, you know, and you guys miss, and then you come back in 2011 and 2012. Is that right mm-hmm. that they get fourth in the region or fourth in state?
in 2010. Mm-hmm. They got fourth in the region.
Okay.
Like I said, they were a pretty good team. And that's one of those cases where you kind of get to where you think it's an entitlement. And
right.
It just didn't run well. And a couple of other teams, Smithson Valley and somebody else, you know, Gregory Portland or something, I can't remember what other teams. A couple of other teams jumped in there and got ahead of us. And we wound up going home.
So that team that gets fourth in 2010, 2011 comes around, and they're going to make probably the biggest one-year jump, you know, in any of
yeah.
the teams that you had, right?
Yeah, from not making it to the state meet to being state champions, that was a big deal. And those, and they weren't considered the best team in the state, but they kept getting better and better as the season went along. And I don't think, I'm trying to remember if they were regional champions. I think Lockhart beat us at region again that year. Hmm. Lockhart or Cedar Park by that time. It must have been Cedar Park, but anyway. But again, they just got better and better and pulled it. I can't remember if that was our tiebreaker year, if it was the next year.
11, y'all beat Cedar Park by 14.
That's what it was, yeah. And then
in the next year,
I keep throwing Lockhart in the mix. By that time, it was Cedar Park that we were knocking heads with. But yeah, that was. Yeah, they were pretty confident. Cedar Park, still going?
Yes, sir. We're still
okay.
going.
Yeah, Cedar Park was pretty confident by that time.
And Cedar Park beat y'all at the regional meet.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We finished a little behind them at the regional meet, and that was out at that shooting club thing. And that was one of the first years they were out there, and they had this horrible starting thing. We were way behind early on and had to catch up. It was one of those rivalries where you try not to make things personal, but it was always satisfying to beat them
at
some high level of competition.
Right.
And and that's like, you know, different successes can be equally enjoyable. The year you guys won, 2009, any of those years where you go out and you've just got a team that's just beats everybody. It's just crazy. It's, you know, winning's fun. You know, it's fun to do that. And then, but it's also exciting to have victories like 2011 where it's so close at the end you don't know what's happening, or, you know, you get to 2012 where it's actually a tie and you have to go to the tiebreaker. Those are just exciting times. It's a lot of
That was the craziest one. And, you know, we were there because I was in Ozona in 2012 when you guys tied for that one. And we got fourth, so we're the first team not on the podium, which is that sour, bitter pill to swallow. But then, you know, I can relate there because I ran on a team that won it by a lot. And then I coached a team that won it by a real small. I don't know if it was 2 or 3 points.
Uh-huh.
It was real exciting. I think it would have been less exciting if we hadn't won in hindsight.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it was a lot more fun having won the close one than having won the big one, because as you said earlier, you just feel like, to me it was expected all year. We had to win every single one, and I'm sure that the 09 group would say almost the same thing.
Oh yeah, they were beyond confident.
Yeah,
They perfect scored races. They, you know, came in 1 through 7 in a couple of races.
Yeah.
It was a crazy level of success. And, some people on occasion criticize them for being so cocky and confident. And, when I was 17 or 18 years old, I was full of myself and I wasn't a national champion. To criticize guys for, you know, being as confident as they might have been. It's to be expected. Like I said, every 17, 18-year-old guy is pretty full of himself. And
I know I was special back then.
You sure were.
The 11 and 12 group, though, you know, going back to that, and I'm just thinking about this, is You know, sometimes for a program, there's kind of that pressure. The one thing that was in the back of our minds, I think, in 03 was that this has never been done before. Mm-hmm. So, like, you think you're going to win, and you believe you're the best, but it's never been done before. Yeah. And so there's also a little hair of doubt.
You know, there's a lot of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 11 and 12 groups, I mean, you know, especially 11, you guys lose to Cedar Park at region, mm-hmm. and then you beat them at state. I mean, do you think some of that was just like the, you know, it's kind of a cool, confident feeling when you're from a program that has won 4 state championships at that point, and you're going in, and you know you're good, you're just going to take care of business and do your thing, and you know if you do that, it should turn out potentially favorable.
I think that's well said. I think that by that time, you know, we had adopted an attitude, it's another day at work. Here's what we've got to do to get our job done. And there, I think that if you allow yourself, you want to be excited, you want to anticipate, but if you allow yourself to get too emotional and do stupid things during a race, you can lose it. And but you're right. It's having been there before really does matter. And having an attitude that you know how to do this, you know how to get out there and win a thing. I think it's worth points. It's knowing that you've got a plan is valuable. It, you know, like as you know, and as any, you know, cross country person knows, you know, winning any cross country meet is about points. And so you understand how to manage, you know, how you're running during a race, you know, optimize your score, and those guys knew how to do it. One of the things that we went in there with in particular in that 2011 season, because those guys weren't as seasoned as a lot, you know, some of the teams that had been up there, we dwelt on, was, you know, nobody ever won a 3-mile race in the first 800 meters.
Right.
And that's what happens to a lot of people when they're new to a high level of competition. You get so excited, and you've seen it happen, just mm-hmm. run out and do too much early in the race. And those, you know, we had a plan to go out and just not be near the front over the first 800 meters. And I can remember going out there, and I was standing at 800 meters, and all these other runners are going by, they're going by and going by, and I really didn't mean for them to be this far back, but they did. They were all running comfortably, and they were, even though they appeared to be pretty far back, they weren't more than 10 seconds or so from the leaders.
Right.
And, they all ran real smart races and just went on to, you know, just continually pass people during the race.
So in 2012, was it a bigger shock to beat Cedar Park by that much at region, or was it a bigger shock to be tied with them at the state meet? Like, I don't know what, you know, you felt like on paper it looked like one way or another. Were y'all that much better than them, or did they not run well at regionals?
They didn't run well. Mm-hmm. I think what we were just talking about understanding how to compete and how to win a race, I just think they didn't understand how to do that. And they bounced back and ran real well at the state meet, but at regionals, they just didn't, they were shell-shocked. They just didn't run well there, and they came back and ran real well at the state meet, and we knew it would be close. The talent was virtually the same. It was fun.
Reaching back on the other side of the spectrum, there were girls, you know, and mm-hmm. it's who is the first girl you can really remember that kind of busted through that ceiling in your time coaching?
Well, the girls had some success before I started coaching. And of course, this was back in the day when girls athletics hadn't risen to the level that it is now. And back then, before I started, they had a couple of girls, Kathy Flatley and I can't remember the other girl's name, but her two were really very good runners. Uh-huh. And they had a collection of girls who could finish a race and do all right, so they had some success. They had made it to the state meet, I think finished as high as third place. I'm not sure though. Uh-huh. But for us, the the Heidi Mycock was our first good distance runner, our first, you know, quality cross country runner, and good longer distance runner. And then Courtney Darter came along, and she was, you know, she was great. She wasn't used to running cross country. She was she had been a sprinter, and then had moved up to the 400 and 800. Of course, she was state champion in 800 meters, but she was, you know, she and Heidi and Courtney were the first two, you know, really accomplished runners we had. Tiffany Burt, John's little sister, was pretty good.
Right.
And, but then, you know, and they actually had, the girls team actually got good before the boys team did, but they just never quite reached that same level of success. Later on, we had the Jones sisters, and they were really good. And they were part of that. They finished second in the state in 2005, same as the guys. And so we had a number of good girls on that team.
Yeah, they won a lot of regional titles.
Yeah, the girls.
The years. I would imagine countless, not more than the boys.
Yeah, they've been regional champions more often than the guys have.
Yeah.
They've been good. I mean, there's, you know, it's, we sit here and talk about the guys so much, but the girls' cross-country team has been real successful as well. They've just never quite gotten that state champion. That's kind of how people are measured, but they've always been real good, you know, from the mid-90s or so.
Yeah. What do you think was one of the biggest challenges in coaching, or did you think it wasn't really a challenge to coach both boys and girls, because especially back in the time when they did run two different distances, you know, you got to prepare two different kinds of workouts sometimes, you know, or most of the time. Were there any challenges you felt like that came into play?
I didn't think so at the time, but because I just modify the workout. They do virtually the same workout. The length of the workout and the time expectations and, you know, they do virtually the same workout. The girls we modified from the boys' workout, and for a number of years I was it. I was the only coach, and then I got Michelle Herbst for a year, and she was good, but then she got reassigned to do something else. And then Aaron Bradley came along. And
right.
And I don't think she just connects with the girls. And I didn't think there was never an issue between me and the girls, but she connects with the girls better than I ever did. And I guess it's a woman thing. We still work out together. We still do the same kinds of workouts, do all that kind of stuff. But in terms of managing the team and connecting with the athletes, Aaron was real good at connecting with the girls. And I always thought I was pretty good at it, but she was better. She was better at connecting with the girls. And and they continue to be good. They were second in state last year.
Right.
But there is a difference between coaching girls and coaching guys, and I have to admit that I'm better at working with guys than I am working with girls.
Yeah, I think I've looked over the years too at, you know, it's a totally different technique. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, almost and sometimes it's a different ball game.
Personality management can be
yeah.
And we don't have to mention any names, but you'll recognize this phenomenon. When two girls get in a fight, and when two guys, let's start with guys. Mm-hmm. Two guys have a disagreement, they're mad at each other, they get mad, they have it out, it's over with. Mm-hmm. When two girls on a team are not getting along, they have a hard time resolving it, and pretty soon everybody's choosing up sides, and you can't be my friend if you're her friend, and people are gonna hate me for this, for being sexist, but it's true. It's true. Girls resolve conflict differently from guys, and that was definitely one of the things that used to drive me crazy.
Definitely the issues on the girls' team can tend to linger a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. than they do with the boys, but you know, it is a different deal. So anyone that's coming into cross country coaching, maybe for the first time or whatever, mm-hmm. and you have boys and girls, be aware, you know, as you get into that, that, you know, there's probably gonna be some differences in how you handle each group. So.
And that would probably speak well to Erin Bradley again. I think she's just a lot better at managing the girls. And I was not good at managing that sort of thing, you know, the personal issues and stuff. I could do it more easily with the guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can say all the things Dr. Phil can, but at the end of the day, you're not Dr. Phil, neither am I, and so we don't get that credibility with him for some. Second is the highest level that you guys achieved there. Was there any group there at Champion? Because that was the Bernie High team there, I think, 06, 05.
Right, that was Bernie High School.
And then, so like during the time at Champion, do you guys medal or anything while you're there?
Never made the podium. They had some good teams. Boy, Abigail Tankersley came in, and we had Caitlin Savage and Kate Corcoran. I mean, we had some really good teams, but there were teams that were good enough to be on the podium at state, but it seemed to be a time when there were some really, really other good girls teams. And say Highland Park was crushing everybody, and there were some other girls teams that were just so hot, so they'd go all the way through the season and just run into this buzzsaw at state, and they'd finish well, but they never quite able to get that podium finish.
One thing some people might not notice, though, that I think you and Coach Bradley both did really well in Bernie was you had a lot of girls over the years, and I'll just name a few from each era that played basketball and ran cross country at a big school level. You know, from Christine Garza to Jesse Smith to Hillary Lumpkins.
Right.
I mean, that's a four year period. What did you find that sometimes challenging to work with? And I know who the basketball coaches would have been Herbst and Tate during that time, right? Is that, did he coach Lumpkins? I think Coach Herbst was gone by then, so it would have been Coach Tate. And, you know, did the basketball coaches ever question at all, you know, like a girl putting in that kind of mileage prior to the season?
I didn't have any trouble subordinating what we, you know, because if, like Hillary, she was a great basketball player. Mm-hmm. Jesse was a great basketball player. I didn't have any trouble subordinating what we did to their principal sport. If I would recognize that, you know, for some of these kids, you know, the girls in particular, that was their second sport, and I felt like it was my job to work around that other stuff. I wasn't greedy. I wasn't arrogant about demanding everything of them. I made sure that, or tried to make sure at least, that I had them do all they could without interfering with or endangering what they were doing in their principal sport. It didn't bother me at all to subordinate to that primary sport.
Yeah, I just think it's exceptional and rare, having looked around a lot, you know, to see kind of a continuous set of such significant players, you know, runners on those teams and players, you know, on the basketball group. Because I think, and I could be wrong, I thought Christine was on that state basketball team that with Tori Talbert, and, you know,
I couldn't say for sure.
Okay, I could be totally wrong there, but it's just it's still just, you know.
You're a better historian than I am.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I guess if I look it up somehow, you know, we'll determine that one. But, it's a lot of years to cover. But a lot of girls soccer players too, right?
Right, a lot of soccer players.
Yeah. And they're very complementary sports, cross country and track.
And then I guess, you know, one of the things that...
Or cross country and soccer,
Right. You know, one of the things that I was fortunate to have after a fairly short period of time was a collection of guys that committed entirely to running. That was what they did.
Yeah.
And that, but,
you know, so that, that helped with the boys' success over a period of time. But
going back to the beginning of when we started this and we're talking about, you know, coming out of college track and, you know, you didn't run the distance events, mm-hmm. where did you learn a lot of the stuff that you learned about distance running? Did you just take a similar pattern of what you did to become a better 400 meter hurdler, or did you study from somebody or read?
Well, a lot of it was just analysis of the job that had to be done. You know, I read all I could and studied all I could. When I was in high school, I played football for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then my junior year, we got a new head football coach that was like the prototypical, you know, curse at you, shove you around, you know,
right,
blood and guts kind of football coaching. So I quit, and my best friend ran cross country. So one day during 2 days, I don't need this. So I turned in my gear and I called my best friend and ran cross country. I said, when's practice? And so I was able to run I ran 2 years in high school in cross country, even though I was a sprinter and jumper. And I had a really, really, really good high school coach. And most of what I learned from any other person, I learned from him. And then I just studied and read and made up stuff, did stuff by trial and error a lot of times. And I tried to be the best student of the sport that I could. And I also wanted people like you and the group you were in and the groups that followed to understand the sport. I wanted everyone to be invested. You know, you guys were smart. You knew running. You understood the training and you understood competition. I think to really understand what you're doing and have the people who are participating understand what you're doing is a big deal. But like I said, I read and tried everything I could and tried to analyze what needed to be done and do whatever we could to train for it. Basically, I guess if you could, a model, I guess you know, being from Oregon, I guess I'd do this, you know, we did everything after the Oregon model, you know, all the various kinds of interval training and, you know, distance training and periodization, you know, periods of rest and you know, just coordinating training. You know, I read a couple of books, you know, by Bill Bowerman and Bill Dillinger. Uh-huh. You know, just got everything from those that I could. And whenever I could learn something, I'd steal any idea I could.
Yeah. You know, you talked a lot about how great it was to work with Coach Bradley and mm-hmm. what a great assistant she was and everything. If you don't mind, I'll throw this one at you. You know, and you also mentioned how supportive Coach Leach was mm-hmm. and some of that. What was it like for you working for Sam Champion?
Oh, you know, I say a lot of uncomplimentary things about school administrators. You know, unfortunately, fairly or unfairly, I don't know. One of the things that I sometimes say about administrators is that every administrator is on their way to somewhere else. Oh. You know, I feel that a lot of times. I think that affects decision making and education. And I don't want to get off into that. But Sam Champion is the single administrator I ever worked with who was where he wanted to be forever. He loved the kids at the school. He loved his job. He loved what he did here. And he was flawed like anybody, but there was nobody who was happier to be doing what they were doing than Sam Champion. And there's no school administrator who wanted more to be where he was doing what he was doing. He was unique that way. And of course, you know, he was enthusiastic about everything that went on around the school. You know, he'd be down there, he'd be at district cross country, he'd be at regional cross country. He was enthusiastic about everything that went on in the school, and he was unique. He was unique. There were, that's all I'd say about it. There's no administrator I ever met that loved what they were doing as much as he did and felt like he was in the job that he wanted to be in for his whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he and I didn't always see eye to eye on stuff, and he would get mad at me for it, but you can't, like I said, there's nobody, and he wanted every student's 4 years at Burney High School to be the best 4 years of their life. I mean, that's really, really what he believed. He was a child in a lot of ways himself. He loved being around the students.
Yeah. You were known among, I wasn't smart enough to take your classes, but many of my friends were. And they say you're only as good as the company you keep. I tried, but I don't know if that's a fact either. But many people would say that you were as good of a teacher or better than you even were as a coach. What kind of an emphasis did you put on the classroom, like intrinsically or however you would say that internally, that maybe some within our profession of teaching and coaching maybe don't? Like, how did you see the way that translated into coaching as well?
I continue to feel this way. We've already covered, how I started my first coaching job. I was applying to be a math teacher and they needed a cross country and track coach, and it seemed to catch on. But I always considered myself a classroom teacher first. That's my principal objective, is to educate. And I earned most of my salary and spend most of my time, or did before I was retired, in the classroom doing that. That was my job. And I took that very seriously. People have asked me in the past, if you had to choose one over the other, I would say that, if I had to make the choice, reluctantly, it would be being a classroom teacher. That was my job. I was there to educate. And I liked to feel like I was educating when I was coaching. I hoped that, people would have fun and learn stuff about what we were doing while we were doing that. But I mean, you have to be an educator, I think, to coach well.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And just in interviewing numerous people, I mean, even a guy like Danny Threadgill, who took teaching health class so seriously, mm-hmm. and I felt, I had actually had Coach Bluta, I felt like he did a great job teaching health as mm-hmm. well. And so many coaches that I've seen that are really successful, Mike Williamson, who was the head coach over at Bandera, one of mm-hmm. the first guys I interviewed, I mean, he talks about that too, that if you're not there to teach, as much or more than you are there to coach. I mean, that's what coaching is. It's teaching. Mm-hmm. You're just teaching something that people actually like, yeah. that they're choosing to
we
be there for.
You hope you're having
for.
A good time and they're yeah. liking it as well. Yeah.
So it should be a little bit more relaxed, but mm-hmm. it's such an important component for anybody that is listening to understand that when you go into education, just being a coach is not an option. Mm-hmm. It won't work.
I can't imagine how miserable I'd feel if all I wanted was to be a coach, but I was spending 80% of my day in a classroom. like you just said, I think to be a good coach, I think you have to be a good educator, especially at the high school level. You get beyond that and you got different objectives and different attitude towards things. But if you're gonna work with high school athletes, you've got to be a good educator. Mm-hmm. And outside of just the nuts and bolts of the sport, I think it's important to help set a good moral compass while you're doing it. I think, I've always told people that if I help somebody to be a better athlete, but don't help them to be a better person, I've probably failed at what I did. I think it's important to use that platform to help build good work ethic, good sportsmanship, and so I take it very seriously, doing that. I think I mean, you know, if you say you're called to do a thing, I guess I could say I was called to help make sure, you know, to do whatever I could to help make that happen.
Yeah. You know, I said this at the Hall of Honor deal where they inducted us, that I felt like, you know, it's great to point to all those high school successes, mm-hmm. and, you know, that it's fun to look back and talk about how fast we were and everything, mm-hmm. but the much bigger thing is what we've turned out to be in life. And you look at, you know, just the top seven from that team, I think five of the seven have an advanced degree, mm-hmm. and all seven have college degrees. I mean, Ryan Max, a doctor. I think Evan Tingle teaches at Harvard. You know, I mean, when I looked him up, I think that's where he was. Mm-hmm. I called and, how'd you get this number? I'm smarter than you thought I was. I think that's the only time I'll ever get to tell anybody from Harvard that. And then, you know, I mean, you go on, Jacob's a concrete manager, and... You know, I mean, going down the line, Joel Benavides is successful in the architecture business there in Dallas. And I mean,
they're all decent people.
Yeah.
That's important to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate. I feel fortunate, you know, prior to, you know, starting here in Bernie, you know, I'd been in a lot of places. I'd been all over Texas and Northwest and Hawaii and all over the place. And it was, I enjoyed what I did, I was committed to what I did, but it was mostly a job, and being here in Bernie, things really fell together. I mean, I can't say enough about how great the experience has been here. It's, you know, God, there are people who think that we've had, like in coaching and in our cross-country success that we've had, they get the impression that we're just this richy rich community that, you know, where the kids have everything, and we're above average, but we're not, you know, we're not Highland Park, we're not Westlake, we're not any of that kind of stuff. And but just being here, we got solid people. I mean, the parents are good, the kids are good, it's a great community, it's great geography, I've had supportive administrations, and it really fell together for me here. I get a lot of credit for a lot of stuff, but man, a lot of things came together here with the quality of the, well, you know, it's just the kids here are good. You know, one of the things, you know, I run into is that, well, you know, people kind of say snotty stuff to me. They would about, you know, these all the privileged kids I get to work with. I said, well, the privilege that the kids that I have here have is that most of them come from two-parent nuclear families, uh-huh. where mom and dad work, and they're expected to do the right thing. And that's a pretty good platform to work from.
Yeah.
You know, and you get guys like Sam Champion, who just set a tone for a place where you just, you know, the kids want to be there, the parents like being around. It's just everything really fell together here, and I feel really blessed for the way things came together here in Bernie. Before here, I hadn't been anyplace for any great length of time, and I didn't imagine when I started that I'd be here any longer than I had been anywhere else. But I did like moving around, but 30 years later, I finally called it quits.
Yeah, you know, and there's different challenges and different you know, advantages to working in any kind of a place. Mm-hmm. It's being able to channel and find those and figure out how you take those advantages and eliminate those challenges and you know, obstacles you overcome in different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the world that I coached in Ozona was way different than the world that I ran in Bernie.
Right.
But I would argue with anybody that in many cases, it's a little bit easier to make to take kids like in a place like Ozona where there's not a whole lot going at times, mm-hmm. you know, in different periods of time, and you can get them to buy in more to the idea that cross country is their world.
Uh-huh.
And in a place like Bernie or, you know, Highland Park or Friendswood or Alamo Heights or something, you know, just to name a few, well, there's a lot of life beyond sport cross country, and people don't understand that if they've never coached in these places. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of activities going on. Some of these, I mean, you just wouldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and you know, when you have your practices, most of the time, mom or dad of that two-parent family, they're going to drop the kid off and they're going to be there, you mm-hmm. know? But then there may be a spell of a week or a month or whatever where something outside of that's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard for people that haven't coached in these places that just see it as Pleasantville from the outside, yeah. you know, to fathom. But it's reality. Mm-hmm. I've been in both types, yeah. and it is reality.
Been in quite a variety of places.
I'll talk a little bit about on our last part here, you know, what your family has meant to a lot of your career as well.
Oh, it's been, you know, of course, this is my second marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, I was married previously. It's nothing unremarkable, not much to say about that. But, you know, I got remarried just before you guys came into high school. So it's been everything. We've been, you know, it's been great, you know. And, you know, people ask, like we were talking earlier about, you know, what's more important, the teaching or the coaching and stuff like that. And, you know, most important, it sounds like a cliche, but, you know, my family's the most important thing. You know, I got my wife and got Madison, and that's the biggest thing in my world. And I think that's another thing to bring to the table, you know, when I'm working with kids at school. I think that, you know, they recognize that,
yeah,
and appreciate it. But it's been great. You know, Laura had never lived in a small town like Bernie, and she's enjoyed being out here for the last 20 plus years now. And Madison, of course, has spent her whole life here. It's been fun. This is a you know. Like any place else, Bernie's not perfect, but this is a pretty good place to be with the family.
Yeah, definitely. I can remember in high school, Laura oftentimes, you know, when the schedule permitted and stuff, that she'd be out there at Cibolo, you know, Wilderness Trail with our home meet and stuff, and she mm-hmm. was a loud cheerleader. And going into senior year, when y'all added Madison to the family, you know, several of us were very excited for y'all and everything. And
no, you guys were great. You guys were great when throwing the party for Madison when we adopted her. And
yeah.
I've got plenty of pictures of that. One of them that we keep in there is a picture from that little shower or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
You guys threw.
And she'll be a senior going into next year?
She's
or a junior?
Junior this fall.
Okay, wow.
And Laura used to love when we race out at, you know, Northside, or Northeast used to have that race out at Waterloo River State Park. And then we'd stay on after the meet and cook hamburgers and hot dogs and stuff and go swimming in the river. Laura loved all that stuff. She loves, you know, planning stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Planning snacks at our, you know, meet that we would host here and that kind of thing.
Right.
She embraced it. That's one of the things that sold me on her when we were dating. She was always enthusiastic about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Coach, it's been a real pleasure, and, you know, we'll wrap it up here, and thanks so much for giving a little bit of your time and advice and life and everything else to coaches around the state.
Well, thank you. Whatever. I hope it went all right.
And I'll ask one last question. You know, you don't get enough credit for winning a state championship with Andrew Cashin and Jacob Wells on your team. How do you win with such losers? No, I'm just kidding. Well, that's a wrap, folks. And I went back and forth on taking my last question out about my two old running buddies. But no matter how much we grow up over the years, sometimes we just have to reach back in time and razz people the way we used to. On a serious note, I can't even explain to listeners just how important Coach Fulkerson has been to my life and career. We missed out on some great stories about kids crawling in drainage tunnels, snake bites, a 13-car pile up on the way to Austin. But maybe someday we'll get together and do a follow-up episode that covers some of the fun. I teed him up a bit with my comment about failing my freshman year, but was sure glad he didn't tell all of our listeners about one of the most idiotic plans I ever dreamt up. Maybe next time. Until then, thanks so much to Coach Fulkerson and his family for making the sacrifices they made over the years to allow Coach to mean so much to so many runners that went through the schools in Bernie. Have a great night.
Thanks again for listening, and please remember, if you could, to go and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Until next time.